And we're back. This is Morning Cannolis, a sampling of the news desserts of the week. We're talking this morning, the last in our series of discussions about Supreme Court cases, recent, compelling, important. Right before the break, we were talking about everything from religion to abortion to guns and many other issues. And just as we were going from the first hour to the second hour, I was talking about this case called Oklahoma versus Castro Huerta. This case in which the Supreme Court, after finding previously that much of Oklahoma falls within an Indian reservation, very recently the court rules that state authorities can in fact prosecute non-Indians who commit crimes against Indians on those very reservations. Justice Gorsuch joining the liberal bloc of the Supreme Court in a 5-4 in dissent, but a 5-4 ruling by the majority that permits prosecutions of non-Indians on Indian lands for those kinds of offenses. And so, once again, Oklahoma versus Castro Huerta. We are taking your phone calls this morning, and we've got a number of you. Thank you for your time and waiting for our discussion this morning. Let's first go to Dick from Madison. Dick, good morning to you. What's your comment or thought?
Well, it's a little off the topic. It's about yesterday's testimony from the White House legal counsel.
All right.
Was that a one and done, or I got a question in that, you know how the previous gal came on, Hutchinson?
Yes.
After she had done this same type of testimony, and it really buttressed the whole thing to see her live. I guess what I'm asking, this guy spoke to them for over 7 hours yesterday. I think he's probably got some interesting stuff to see that maybe should be seen the same way we saw Hutchinson, or was that just a one and done?
No, good. Appreciate your comment. And actually, we're going to be chatting a lot more about that throughout this coming week. I'm going to be back on Tuesday to stand in for Mike and Dom. We're chatting about that because, obviously, the January 6th committee meeting at least twice this coming week, including about 9 o'clock on Tuesday and then some primetime program on Thursday. You're talking about Pat Cipollone, who used to be the White House counsel under the Trump administration. He did appear yesterday behind closed doors. On the record, we're taking this transcript, testimony before the committee, playing the fact that he's talking for 8 hours means that he is talking. He's giving them some information, not invoking privileges, not in any way stopping the conversation from going forward. Fully anticipate that sometime very soon we will see the results of that interview, perhaps as soon as this week. Certainly a major event in the committee's review of what happened on January 6th. Appreciate very much the call, Dick, this morning. Let's also then talk with Joe. Joe, you're also from Madison. Glad to chat with you again this morning.
Oh, I'm very interested in your response to the issue of a coach going for prayer at the 50-yard line on school property, and that the court has ruled, Supreme Court has ruled, this exercise of religious freedom under First Amendment holds in both, as you use the language, in school and outside of school. And I'm really curious about how you see this proceeding when it is religions who are not Christian. I just want to give you a couple examples and hear what your reaction might be to that. Let's take the case of Native Americans, the Bad River Band of the Ojibwe Nation in northern Wisconsin. If they choose to have prayer that is of drumming circle and the use of tobacco, which is very important in their religion, can we envision a case in which the coach there is able to use those two items as part of his prayer in leading his students? And what would be the reaction of those parents of Christian children, Jewish children, atheist children to that? Or let's take another. There's an increase in the U.S. military of service people who are claiming membership legitimately in the Norse religions. And, you know, based on the old Vikings, there's a big interest in that. And indeed, in Arlington Cemetery, those service members who have died can claim to have the symbol of the hammer of Thor on their gravestone. The U.S. government realizes this is a real religion. So if we have an ex-service member who is a football coach in, let's say, Antigo, Wisconsin, who wants to offer the prayers of his religion, which is the Norse religion, how does that go? How does that go in terms of other children who are around them who don't follow the Norse religion or who don't follow the Native American religion? I would love to hear how this is going to play out in modern life.
Joe, as always, your thoughts insightful and incisive. This is a great challenge going forward, right? And as I said before the break, I think most people look at Bremerton as being, if not a break, it certainly is a drifting from this previous clear delineation between what happens in schools, what happens with school children, not having an endorsement by a school district, in this case understood as a government, an official public entity, not doing that and imposing upon students who may in fact be of diverse religions. That's your point, whether you're a member of the Ojibwe tribe and affiliated in some way with a Norse religious belief. That's the wonder and the joy of America. But it also, the whole concept here is long envisioned that we do not bring those things into classrooms. We do not make them part of our public education. Here, plainly, the Supreme Court is permitting that to go ahead. And I think, Joe, the point of your very good examples, both with respect to Native American tribes, Norse religions, there are many, many others you can think of where it's getting blurred, right? And frankly, I think it's one of those situations where because of the impact of this case, I think legitimately school districts around the country are going to be facing, as the new school year begins, lots of concerns, lots of challenges, lots of issues raised by parents, raised by students who now want to bring prayer back into the schools, advocating, if you will, for their own faith beliefs. That's always been contrary to our national history. And so I think the point that you make here, really more the head-scratching point about where do we go from here, I think the Supreme Court could have gone in an opposite direction. Simply said, you know what, Coach, you can, in fact, you can pray individually. You can't do it with the entire team. You can't do it in this official setting, which is the end of the football game. You can't do it in this very public venue that does partake, if you will, of a classroom, if you will. It's out in the open, I know, but it's a very official institutionalized situation. Simply have the prayer in the privacy of your own home, in the privacy of your own park, and not have that imprimatur of a government entity on that. That was a distinction was always made. Now more and more, as you've indicated, Joe, as the Supreme Court case in Bremerton also reflects, we've got a messy situation. It has been blurred. And your question, which I take will be rhetorical, about what happens next? What about these other religions who also now want to pray, want to exercise their faiths inside a public school, inside a governmental institutions? What do we do with that? And so I appreciate so much the call, the observation, Joe. I think it's right on the money. And finally, we've got Paul also calling in from Madison. Paul, what's your thought or comment this morning? Morning on Morning Cannolis.
Well, I've got a question about our Supreme Court here in Wisconsin.
Okay.
If the left-leaning judge wins in February, I believe the election is, can the gerrymandering issue be brought up again?
And so, Paul, your inquiry is about the upcoming election for the Supreme Court here in the state of Wisconsin. As you know, 7 members of the Supreme Court. We've got a race already underway for that seat. A very important race, undeniably. And I think that's what your question goes to. Your question is whether or not the issue of gerrymandering can be brought up again. The answer is cases are before the Supreme Court when there is, in fact, a challenge in courts. And so if there's a case in controversy, if there is a challenge between two parties, presumably initially beginning at a lower court level, going up to an appeals court, and then ultimately coming up to a Supreme Court, could a court revisit past decisions? Absolutely. Absolutely it could. State Supreme Court can do that. Again, if the case is properly in front of it, if there's been some record, if you will, at the lower court levels, there certainly could be a review, a reconsideration of past cases. We saw that at the United States Supreme Court not too long ago when, as we said at the start of our program this morning, in this case called Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health We saw the reversal of 49 and a half years of precedent. So that principle, the answer to your question is yes, that could happen, requires a case to be before the Supreme Court, whether it's the state of Wisconsin on gerrymandering, other issues before the United States Supreme Court. But court cases always come up and are decided by judges when parties bring them to their attention. So appreciate that comment, that observation about civics in America. Paul, thanks for your call this morning. We're talking again about other Supreme Court cases that have been decided recently by our United States Supreme Court. Let's talk about two more of those that are also significant on its docket. And both of these relevant. A lot of comments this morning and lots of thoughts this morning about religion in America. Joe called in and proposed some concerns, some issues, some challenges as we go forward in the wake of Bremerton and the prayer case. There's another case that's also out there called Nance versus Ward. Nance versus Ward. And again, it kind of fell under the radar, but it falls, again, in the category of what do we do in connection with religion inside our corrections system. Here's how the case comes about. An inmate named Michael Nance is arguing that his constitutional right to be spared from cruel and unusual punishment, which is under the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, would be violated if he were to be put to death by lethal injection. He is on death row, and the plan is to put him to death, to execute him by lethal injection. He maintains that his veins in his body would be compromised by that physically. The law basically is that inmates are often permitted to identify some alternatives, and Mr. Nance proposed a firing squad as a method of terminating his life by the state. Officials in Georgia, where this case comes about, he says, could in fact adopt that as opposed to the injection. And the case in Nance versus Ward was whether or not Nance could sue under the civil rights law. Justice Kagan, writing for the majority, says in fact that he should be able, writing for the dissent rather, says that he should be able to do that. And we'll talk more about that case right after the coming break here on Morning Cannolis, WAUK Radio, The Shaw, in downtown Waukesha, Wisconsin. This message.